Hi, this is Armel from Trouble FM, and you're listening to Codeless.
We're passing a threshold right now where children are learning voice as the primary interface.
I think with Trouble, the goal is to help people get the information that they need in a short amount of time.
You need to build solutions for 10 years from now, because the ones that are from 5 years from now were already solved 5 years ago.
The only thing that we do is that we're delivering it through audio using this format that we call Shortcast. The Shortcast is designed and architected to share information succinctly to the listener.
I literally could publish this tomorrow. People would just be able to download it and just their life would just start. In 2020, your life has become the interface. Anytime you have an interaction with technology, your behavior is the interface.
Hey, welcome to episode 18. This jam session was recorded in the last weeks of March 2020, right when New York City was declared as the U.S. outbreak epicenter for COVID-19. The episode features two guests. The first is Chris Dancy, the world's most connected person, and the author of Don't Unplug, How Technology Saved My Life and Can Save Yours Too. The second guest is Armel Beaudry, founder of Treble.fm, an audio platform hosting shortcasts from your favorite sources and creators, keeping you updated on the topics that you care about. Both Chris and Armel were previous guests in episode 12, along with David Peterson from Airtable. I've been saving this audio from our session of close to 3 hours, and I think it's relevant given the topic of voice as an interface, which we covered with Zamo in episode 17. We're going to get to a quick intro from Chris and roll right into the session. Enjoy.
Hi, my name's Chris Dancy. I live in Houston, Texas. I'm known as the world's most connected person. Seriously, Google, most connected. I developed the Neighborhood COVID Response System on Airtable and powered by Nextdoor for communications.
So this is one of those conversations where there's a lot I have to unpack. Voice technology is just another interface. And so whether it's paper, screen, visual, voice, sound, my question for you, Chris, is given all your experience and how you're measuring data about yourself and everything around you, is there going to be one interface to rule them all and unlock the full spectrum of humanity? Or are we going to resort to more of a multimodal construct?
I think the idea of interface is really important for people who aren't thinking about interface, because in 2020, your life has become the interface. Anytime you consume or have an interaction with technology, your behavior is the interface. I think we will move slowly from behavior to biology, because behavior and biology are really the two end game interfaces. All behavior really sits on top of kind of a behavioral database, which is basically everything happens at a time, everything happens at a place. So the next thing is activity, right? So you're some time, some place, but are you sitting, walking, or standing? So if you're not sitting, walking, or standing, that's activity, the act of volition, then you're dead, right? So you can be sometime, someplace, but if you're not moving or sitting, you're dead, right? On top of activity, you've got behavior. So what are you doing while you're sitting, walking, standing? You're listening to a show? Are you reading a book? Are you in a meeting, et cetera, right? So these are all programmable touch points. On top of behavior, you've got biology. So how are you feeling when you're doing what you're doing as you're walking, sitting, or standing at a place at a time? And then on top of that, you've got environmental. So environmental is what are the external factors that are influencing that. So if you're a programmer and you want to send someone new information, you could send them at a certain time. You could send them to them when they get to a certain space. You could send them if they've been sitting too long or if they've been running too much. You can send it to them when their heart rate's high or their sleeping's off, or you can send it to them something if it's hot outside. So a perfect example of this is basically your GPS, if you're going to go for a run, right, should basically tell you the shady route if it's hot, right? So there are ways that you program along this, and there's six layers, right? Time, place, activity, behavior, biology, environment. Now, what's really interesting about the behavior stack is you can take any two points on that. If you just have location and environment, you can make assumptions about the rest of it. So if it's 2 a.m., that's time, and the decibels are 120, that's sound, That's up environment. You can probably make an assumption you're at a concert or a bar or something, right? For me, when I design tech solutions for big companies, it's really around helping companies stop making screens pretty and start making information useful.
Hi, my name is Ahmed Abodri Kembe. I'm based in Toronto, Canada, and I'm the CEO and founder of Treble FM, a platform that makes it easy to create, share, and listen to shortcasts.
Armel, can you just talk about like voice as an interface and like where you think it's going?
Yeah, I think voice is a powerful paradigm. So in the voice kind of interface, there is no desktop. So you can go directly to your intent and it allows the human to interact with the computer directly. So just like no code, it opens technology to a lot more people.
Yeah, that's interesting. So one thing that I thought about was, well, what can come next after voice? But I guess the holy grail is really like mastering interfaces. Does that make sense with you guys?
For me, the interfaces is really more like the channel. But I think what's interesting with the voice is that it allows more people to get to their goal faster. Every interface has its pros and cons. If I need to show you 100 people, I cannot do it with just voice because I'll need to describe it to you. That's what screens are good for. So I think every single interface has its pros and cons. I just think we haven't fully experienced yet the power of the voice interface. If you want to probably find restaurants, it's probably easier to use a screen to do that. That said, it would be good, for example, to be able to say, you know, I'm looking for restaurants that are around the area that do delivery that are vegan. And then you say that, and then you can see a list on the screen. So that's, for example, the combination of those interfaces where you have like the voice interface leveraging the screen channel. I think those are the kind of things that in the future, 5-10 years from now, we're going to really see open up more opportunities for people.
Can I just throw an interface comment in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's super important we just make this very clear that without a screen, all interfaces are dependent on someone else. We're passing a threshold right now where children are learning voice as the primary interface, which means the trust involved in the answer and or solution being delivered is massive. So if you Google something, even though 90% of the time or more you take the first hit, you're still given a choice. And I think interface choice has to be a right in the future. I have a really simple chart I use when I teach. And what I do is I just kind of walk people through what was it like to go from the world I was born into to the world most people think we're in. And the reality is we're not in the touch, talk, swipe. We've left that world. We don't think we have because we're still touching, talking, and swiping. But the responses coming back from touching, talking, and swiping are based on how we're behaving, how we're feeling, and what we're paying attention to. There's a reason cameras are so pervasive in tech nowadays, right? You can glean so much more for how someone's speaking than what they're picking. What if we go to what we're already seeing, right? Smart homes, clothes that have sensors, and people who put technology in them. We are literally past the point where we need to start talking about, do we have an ethical responsibility now that your life is an interface? I've been with people in cars and they each will have their own GPS going. And while it looks like you have a choice, you usually don't. You usually take just the fastest way. But there are so many more important things when traveling than speed. And I think unless we start talking about, do you have autonomy or are you literally convenienced into addiction? How do we allow someone to say, oh, wait a minute, I value exercising and not having things quicker. Okay, so what interface collaborations would we want for that? I hope 10 years from now, people find this podcast and go, we should have been focusing on how do we restore or enhance autonomy in a world that has less screens. If you want to be successful in the economy, you need to build solutions for 10 years from now because the ones that are from 5 years from now were already solved 5 years ago.
Chris, I want to move from interfaces and autonomy to data. So we know you're measuring a lot of stuff around you, about you every day. Walk us through a day in the life of what you're measuring on a regular basis from when you wake up to when you go to bed.
Yeah, for 10 years, my whole focus has been on two ways of behaving. One is low friction data collection. So I don't want to write anything down or log things manually. It's just too much, right? You can do it, and it's a great way when you get started to understand. But the other side of low friction data collection is ambient feedback. So I don't also want to be bothered by intrusive information. So I basically want to live my life and have the things that I value delivered to me in time. So a really simple example of this is if you go to 2008, going to the bar too much was a bad thing. So what I did was just put a geofence around the bar. If I went to the bar, I'd get a message. If I ignored the message for myself, for my system, then it would send a message to the bartender who I knew. And if she ignored the same messaging system, then I would send something to my family. And then finally, I cut off my credit card through an API, right? So it's just basically a software behavior leash with a bunch of different interfaces that you're interacting with. So a normal day for me looks like a normal day for you. The thing that differentiates me nowadays is what I do with the information. So for example, being in this meeting with you was tracked. Why I'm sitting here, my voice levels, the decibels are being tracked. So if I actually speak too loud, the lights will dim, telling me to calm down, right? And then everything from like what I ate to what music I've listened to today is being tracked. You have to think about your life now. Is there something in your life that you want to be different? So if you're low code and you want to build solutions for the future, you have to enable some way to help people understand what they want to change, find out the behavior that makes up the undesired state, collect the undesired information, visualize it, and then create a way that you can insert a new routine.
So you already talked about this idea of a habit store. So if there's a habit store, what's a simple 101 way for people to start to like leverage their data without having to go through all the growing pains that you have?
There's three levels to this. So basically everything's no code. But the first one is that there are aggregators now in 2020 that we didn't have 10 years ago. Something called Gyroscope is a great way. It automatically runs in the background, downloads what you're listening to, how much time you're spending on your computer, where you're traveling to, how you're traveling there. I mean, it's amazing. So aggregators is the simplest way to get into this, right? Rescue Time on your computer is a great aggregator. It watches what programs you're using and then gives you reports, right? Because you don't know what you don't know. After aggregators, you've then got kind of the next level, which is what I call a single point collector. And a single point collector is, let's just say you use Swarm or Spotify. And every time you do something in one of those, you just create a little trigger that grabs the data from Swarm or Spotify and writes it to something, right? So that's a single point collector. The last thing would be using a single point collector with an action. So when I do this, do this. The easiest interface and collector is Google Calendar, which is a great API, really easy to use through Zapier. And Airtable 2, don't be afraid. And if you need help, just contact me.
All right, Armel, I'm going to start with you. With so much data being collected from all of us, people of all ages, backgrounds, what would be your advice about living in this noisy world today?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think the way to approach it is you need to take a step back and think about the sources you trust to get information from. And then from that, you create some kind of routine to be able to consume that information first before you get to anything else. And I think Twitter, for example, there's a lot of information, but out of that information, there might be, I don't know, 10, 20% that you actually need. And 80% that might be cool to have, but you don't actually need it to function. It's architected for you to keep scrolling and spend time on the platform. It's the same thing for Facebook. It's the same thing for Instagram. I don't think that's the way to think about it. I think with travel, the goal is to help people get the information that they need in a short amount of time. So honestly, when I see someone on travel and they spend like 10 minutes of their time, I'm happy. If someone spends 2 hours on travel, I'll be curious. So the goal of the platform is to help people get the information they need in the shortest amount of time possible. And the app is designed around that. So the first thing you need to do is make that conscious decision of what are the things that are important to me? Is it sports? Is it self-improvement? Is it motivation? Like, what do I need to function properly? What are the sources? What are the people that I trust to give me that information? Once you made all those choices, that's it. You come on the app every morning whenever you have time to consume that information. What Treble allows me to do is get the gist of what I need to know in a short amount of time. And the only thing that we do is that we're delivering it through audio using this format that we call Shortcast. The Shortcast is designed and architected to share information succinctly to the listener. And the person that's getting the information is getting that the information in the most condensed, formatted way possible.
I like the idea of Shortcast.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, so Armel, definitely want to thank you for coming on and really, really appreciate the time. I'm looking forward to working on Treble.
It's a pleasure, and I'm always happy to be part of the conversation. Thanks again.
Yeah, Armel, how can folks listening reach you or connect with you?
Yeah, so easiest way to reach me is actually through email, armelbaudry@treble.fm.
All right. Thank you very much, Armel. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Okay, guys.
So, Chris, once you decide you're overwhelmed and you know what you want to measure, you know what you want to change, and you found like software or habits to help you do that, there's so much data that companies are now creating so many subscriptions. But at what point does this like get to too many subscriptions and specializations? Can we have a habit store, and do they exist right now?
They really don't exist right now. I mean, the solution I use to kind of manage the idea of too many habits is in my personal Airtables. You need to like start to think about your life holistically, right? If you just manage your subscriptions, you're just going to say, okay, then what's next? So when you're figuring out how you want to list and manage your subscriptions, how often they get paid, who gets that money, when's the last time you did it, all the kind of nuts and bolts stuff, you have to then say, is there actually anything good coming out of this? Like, am I using this service? For me, if I think about the app stack and I go back and look at something like productivity and I look at like all the apps I use for note collecting, well, I was able to say, okay, you know, category note collecting under productivity, 4 of these 8 things just go. Yeah. Even if they're free, they need to go because complexity slows down your ability to focus on what's important.
So when you, for example, when you decided to embark on this, like how many years ago now?
So the whole me, like Chris Dancy, that started in 2008. Everything you're seeing here started in 2018. So I've only been on this system for a little over a year or so. Well, the linking of everything.
Or the linking of it in a database. In the same way you created the COVID response template, is there a template for people to start to develop this?
So everybody wants me to publish this. Because this is in the same database that COVID is. I literally could publish this tomorrow. Like people would just be able to download it and just their life would just start.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I haven't is twofold. One, COVID was interesting because it was a really simple idea that people just understood. There's a form to help. There's a form to volunteer. Take care of each other. Right.
Right.
This is much bigger. Right. I'm not publishing it to keep it from people. I need to make it simple enough that I'm not overwhelmed with people. I mean, that's why I wrote the book a couple of years ago. I was hoping people would use that. But like everything I do, it's so hard, Edmund. It was just way too early. I will publish this Airtable at some point. I'm kind of shocked Airtable even noticed me. I've been on their platform for some time. But yeah, I mean, I'm just going to have to at some point because I think as more and more people kind of wake up to how connected they are, they're going to want solutions.
Got it. I just wanted to bring back up the book. What's the name of the book?
It's called Don't Unplug, How Technology Saved My Life and Can Save Yours Too. And it literally walks you through kind of drunken, fat, smoking, addicted to drugs and in jail me to me today. It's still in bookstores. You can get it from Amazon, Kindle. I narrated it on Audible. I've got sample chapters on my website at chrisdancy.com/book you can download. And then I get people who tell me all the time, especially college students, hey, I really want your book. I literally send book copies to people.
Listen, this is awesome. I've learned a lot that I wanna take from here. What's a question that I haven't asked you that you wish I did?
How do you want to be remembered?
How do you want to be remembered, Chris?
Pain is the best way to find out who you are, and he was painfully aware.
I love that. That's awesome. That's great. Chris, I really enjoyed having you, and I look forward to talking some more.
Thank you so much, Evan. Be well.
All right. See you, Chris.
Okay, that's it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. As usual, there's some more audio after the closing credits, so please stick around or skip ahead for some additional thoughts from our guests. Please rate and review us on your favorite listening platform. It helps us get discovered by more people who want to unlock creativity and accelerate transformation. You can reach us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube through the Codeless Podcast handle. Just search for the words Codeless and Podcast and you can't miss us. Or just go to codelesspodcast.co. All music provided through the appropriate licensing and permissions. Big thanks for the music to Steph Skilly, Bobby Odsock, R Mark, 1313, Raising Sounds, and prod.nocredit. You can find more information and links in the show notes.
Chris, before we sign off, there's a spectrum of people that want to connect to you, but then there's some people that just want to tell you you're a great guy or buy you coffee. How can people reach you?
Well, I'm going to be in Houston for at least 4 or 5 months. So if you're in Houston, just give me a shout. I spend most of my time thinking on Twitter. So I think the fastest way is you can DM me via Twitter. I can't remember who on the show today said they love email. I love email because it actually flows into automation. So my email is just chris@chrisdancy.com. If you just want to binge watch Chris Dancy stuff, I've got a show on Netflix called Darknet. My website has a bunch of videos, audio. I've done one TED Talk, but there are 5 TED Talks about me. So you can just go and just have a Chris Dancy fest if you want. You know, like, don't be afraid to just pick up the phone. I mean, my number is 917-994-0260. It's a Google Voice number, so I can block people who get weird. But like, there's no replacing someone who picks up when you call that you don't know, who instantly is interested in your life and helping you. That literally is what social media is. So don't be afraid to reach out to me in any way that you're comfortable. And if none of those are good for you, my address is online, but that's just creepy people.